Hello, everybody, and welcome to the AEW Revolution Review Show here on the unofficial WWE podcast. My name is Mimi Burris, and today is March 8th, 2021, and we have a whole lot to talk about, so let's just get right into it.
It's about the 14 years it took me to go from undesirable to un-goddamn-deniable! Oh, my God!
Your AEW World Champion, Kenny, by God, Omega.
Because I'm better than you, and you know it.
All right, everybody, we have a whole lot to talk about in regards to Revolution last night, but before we get into that, I do want to take a quick detour over to our email. And we did receive an email last week from DJ Kuzmo, and I want to make sure I can read that and respond to that. And some of it has to do with, obviously, Revolution and Dynamite last week, but still fun to hear, fun to talk about, and I want to make sure we respond to that first. So let's head on over to our email. And DJ says, "Hey Mimi, this is DJ Kuzmo. Been listening to you on the WWE podcast since Matt brought you on this show before you started your highs and lows show. Keep up the good work. I agree with you, there was an energy throughout this week's AEW Dynamite show. The Cargill and Shaq versus Cody and Red Velvet really set the tone for the entire show. Totally agree, that is what I talked about last week. Shaq's table bump was awesome, and he had a really good performance, and again, I couldn't agree more. I finally got to see Jade Cargill's in-ring debut on AEW, and there were some minor botches from both her and Red, but enjoying this match, I was able to overlook them. Again, I couldn't agree more. I felt the exact same way." He goes on saying that the segment with the Inner Circle was pretty hilarious when MJF was roasting Conrad Thompson and then quotes MJF with something that I am definitely not allowed to say on this show. But yes, MJF was hilarious, and so was Chris Jericho, as they always are. I love MJF's heel heat. In my opinion, he is the best heel in pro wrestling right now. And again, I couldn't agree more with, you know, all your sentiments about Dynamite last week. I think MJF is the future of AEW, as he says, and just, like you said, the greatest heel in pro wrestling right now. In regards to AEW Revolution, DJ says, "The match I'm looking forward to is the highly anticipated exploding barbed wire death match. This match is more dangerous than an Inferno match. How do you prepare for a match like this?" And yeah, that match was crazy, and we will definitely get into it. But the actual match itself, you know, before the finish, was insane. These two guys are incredible. And he says, "Kenny Omega is my choice to win and retain." You were right, and I agree. I was thinking the same thing. He says, "Finally, I'm thinking the mystery Hall of Famer wrestler will be Batista. On his Twitter, he was teasing about possibly coming out of retirement. My fantasy choice is definitely CM Punk, but realistically, it might not happen. I know this choice is not a Hall of Famer yet, but how about Zelina Vega on AEW? Just a thought. Anyway, sorry for the long email. Best regards, and I'll talk to you next time." No apologies at all, and I'll respond to all of that. But if you want to shoot me an email just like DJ did and possibly get on the show, obviously, if time permits, I would love to hear from you guys, and I'd love to talk to love to talk wrestling. Worst comes to worst, I can't get you on the show. We'll definitely shoot you an email back. So if you want to do that, you can email me at mimi.realwwepodcast@gmail.com. And yeah, and send me your thoughts. I'd love to talk wrestling with you guys and hopefully get you on the show just like DJ this week. So in regards to your pick of Batista, obviously it was not him. It was Christian, which I did call in my email back to you. And so he can vouch for me on that one. I did guess that one. But I don't see Batista ever coming out of retirement, and I kind of hope he doesn't. The last time he came back to WWE and he did that whole thing with Triple H and the weird nose piercing thing, it was just weird And yeah, I think he's probably going to be butthurt about the whole Daniel Bryan thing for the rest of his life. So I don't see Batista ever coming back out of retirement. But my fantasy choice is definitely CM Punk too, DJ. I would love to see CM Punk back in any wrestling ring anywhere. Anywhere he goes, I will watch, even if I'm not a watcher of it. Like, if he goes to Ring of Honor, I will now be a dedicated Ring of Honor fan because I love CM Punk. I think Underrated. I think he is probably my favorite male wrestler of all time. It goes back and forth. But I love CM Punk, and I'm totally with you. And I think he would be a perfect fit in AEW. Great promo, unscripted. He would definitely thrive. But, Father Time is catching up with him, and he's running out of time for sure. And so I don't think it's ever going to happen, sadly. In regards to Zelina Vega on AEW, obviously she wasn't the pick either, and I think that Tony Khan had actually made it, at least didn't mean to, but had mentioned that it was a male. But Zelina Vega on AEW, period, I would love. I know Tony Khan actually had made or mentioned they were going to reach out to her immediately after her 90-day clause was up and try to get her on AEW, and I think she would be a perfect fit. I think Zelina Vega is incredible on the mic, and that was scripted. So imagine what she could do in AEW just with a couple bullet points, and she could just go off. And then, you know, really underrated are her skills in the ring. I think she was a little bit rusty in WWE, obviously because she hadn't wrestled in a while, being the manager for Andrade. But Zelina Vega is pretty world-traveled. I know she wrestled in Mexico and a bunch of other places across the world. So yeah, I'd love to see Zelina Vega in AEW. I think she would be a perfect fit. So thank you, DJ, for your email. And now we will get right into the Revolution card, starting with the pre-show. But if you want to send me an email, like I said before, you can email me at mimi.realwwepodcast@gmail.com. Sorry for my reading, guys. I know I think that took up like 5 minutes of the show, but I'm going blind in one eye. Legitimately. So, but like I said, let's get started with the pre-show. And this match was Riho and Thunder Rosa versus Dr. Britt Baker and not Rebel, because she had an injury. So Maki Ito stepped in. And yeah, I mean, this was not super exciting, just typical tag team pre-show match. All I can say about it was that the right person got the pinfall, and Britt Baker and Maki Ito took the victory, and then we will see them later on in the night. But moving on to the main card of the show, and starting with our opening match, it was Chris Jericho and MJF versus the Young Bucks for the AEW World Tag Team titles. And this might have been my favorite match of the night. It was definitely up there. This was a classic heel versus babyface, you know, tag team match, and the Young Bucks played the baby faces better than ever. Totally loved how it wasn't overdone when they first came out about, just the over-aggression or over-aggressiveness when, you know, the rivalry gets personal. It can almost look hokey. I think the Young Bucks played this perfectly. And yeah, so let's get into the match. Match started with the Young Bucks in control. They hit a double suicide dive into some stereo sharpshooters in the ring. Nick Jackson hits a awesome senton on Chris Jericho along the middle ropes. Chris Jericho and MJF end up taking control when MJF grabs Nick Jackson's feet, and Chris Jericho is able to hit a springboard drop kick. You know, this match was a lot of back and forth between, you know, who had control, and there was some interference from Wardlow outside the ring. There's this great spot where Matt gets the hot tag and Nick hits this great clothesline bulldog combination while giving Chris Jericho the bird. Nick hits this unbelievable pile driver-like thing, and then MJF gets the tag to Chris Jericho. And then later on in the match, Chris Jericho reverses like the tombstone and then gives Nick Jackson, I think it was Nick, a tombstone of his own. Little homage to The Undertaker there. There were a bunch of near falls in this match and great submissions. There was a part where Chris Jericho gets the Lion Tamer on Nick Jackson, but Nick tags in Matt, and then Chris Jericho just puts the Lion Tamer on Matt Jackson. MJF channels his inner DX, I guess, and just kept saying suck it to Matt Jackson, I think it was. Anyways, we get further on the match, Wardlow distracts the ref while Chris Jericho hits Matt Jackson with the bat, better known as Floyd. And then MJF hits him with the Heatseeker for another near fall. And then later on we get MJF going for the punch with the pinky ring, but he gets and I think I'm quoting Excalibur or Tony Schiavone or JR, one of the three. He gets ping-ponged back and forth with super kicks, and he's, like, drooling down his face. It was so satisfying to watch. Just, again, your standard, like, baby faces kicking the crap out of, like, the most scummy heel in pro wrestling there is. It was a great, great little segment of the match. And then there's a little bit of a sloppy driver by the Bucks, but they get the 1-2-3 on Chris Jericho, and that is the match. The Young Bucks retain. Some of the little details in this match, like the little cells, for example, hitting Matt's head against Jericho's foot on the turnbuckle, were a little lazy and sloppy and messy, but kind of just like DJ Kuzmo said in the email, like, such a great match, barely even noticed any of that stuff. I actually predicted that Chris Jericho and MJF were going to win this match. They were a little bit more of a hopeful story beat coming out of that, but we get more, of course, AEW, right? We get to see where this Inner Circle storyline is going later on with the interview with Alex Marvez, and we will get into that a little bit later. So, all in all, great match. Nothing but praise for these guys. You know, you couldn't have expected anything less from the four. Absolute professionals, absolute incredible wrestlers, and yeah, so probably, like I said, my favorite match of the night. And and then we get into the Casino Tag Team Royale. I have all the notes for this match, but I am not going to bore you all with it. I'm just going to skip down to the final four, who were Death Triangle, Jungle Boy from Jurassic Express, John Silver and Alex Reynolds of Dark Order, and SCU. Phoenix eliminates Daniels, and probably one of the most impressive eliminations I've ever seen. He's, like, jumping all around the ropes. I couldn't even tell you what he did, but it was incredible. Jungle Boy eliminates Reynolds. Pac and Silver have this awesome face-off in the middle of the ring, and show me a match that I didn't even know was a dream match between the Dark Order, John Silver and Alex Reynolds, versus Death Triangle. At least two out of three parts of Death Triangle. And then Rey Fénix eliminates John Silver with a tightrope walk kick, which, again, to me is another amazing, of course, it's Rey freaking Fénix, right? But another amazing, impressive move, one of my favorite things that Rey Fénix does. But he eliminates John Silver with the tightrope walk, and then Jungle Boy eliminates Pac in a great, again, I see another, right? The Jurassic Express versus Death Triangle, another dream match. Great ending segment between these two. But then we have Fénix and Jungle Boy are the last two in the match. They hit each other with some crazy chops, and then Fénix gets shot out of a freaking cannon, as he always does, and hits Jungle Boy with a suicide dive. The refs have a little, like, scuffle about, you know, did he go over the top rope? No, he went right in between the ropes. Then Jungle Boy hits a Poison Rana on Fénix, but amazing fast action. Couldn't even, you know, too fast to call. All in all, Fénix eliminates Jungle Boy with an emotional and well-deserved victory, because I want to see these guys. I want to see gold around Rey Fénix's waist, and Pac too. I mean, these guys are the most talented wrestlers in AEW, in my opinion. This is the best booking. I don't even remember who I predicted, but this was the right choice. And overall, pretty boring match besides a few spots. I mean, there was that quick thing with QT Marshall and Dustin Rhodes, where QT eliminated Cesar Bononi, and Dustin comes up to him like, what the heck are you doing, dude? And then he's like, all right, screw you, I'm out. And so there was a little story beat there. But for the most part, this was exactly what it was. A Casino Tag Team Royale, essentially a tag team Royal Rumble. But yeah, like I said, right decision. Happy to see happy to see Death Triangle win, but I would have been fine with Jurassic Express too. And then we go into the back and we get a Paul White interview, and he's asked about the new debut. He gives a little promotion for his color commentary position, and then he gives a hint, which is, this particular talent, I don't think anyone can outwork them. And we know why he says that later on, but I will get into that later, because now we're going to talk about the AEW Women's World Championship match. All right, so this match was between Hikaru Shida, the champion, and Ryo Mizunami, the challenger, who won the AEW Eliminator Tournament. Again, I've got a lot of notes for this match, but I'm not going to bore you with most of them. Let me give you the quick rundown as to how this match went. The match starts off with a handshake, again, before Rio swings at Hikaru Shida. Beginning of the match looked really animated. I thought they were, like, playing around, and, like, this is a championship match. I didn't like the goofy slaps in the corner. Mizunami tosses Hikaru Shida over the barricade onto the ground after she tries to hit a knee strike off a steel chair. And I liked, the reason I'm bringing this up is because I liked that the commentary team said, oh, you know, she's allowed to use the chair as a launching point, not as a weapon. It sounds silly, but, like, it's just a simple thing that does its best to keep the rules intact. Rio sells a great forearm, and I love that because a lot of that did not get done this entire pay-per-view, and does it ever get done selling for punches in the face or forearms in the face or kicks in the face or any of that. It's just like, oh, we'll just Hulk up. All of us can just become Hulk Hogan and not sell punches or kicks. Rio then sells a spike for Hikaru Shida for a near fall. The two no-sell, a few knees and kicks in a sequence, and then they give a call back to the Dynamite with the holding each other and throwing forearms. Ryu Mizunami hits the leg drop for a two count, and then there are some stiff forearms and kicks from Hikaru Shida and another Falcon Arrow. Again, this is all to me. It felt slow. Then Hikaru Shida does a blatant poke of the eye to Ryu Mizunami, ref right in front of the ref. They say nothing about it, really. Couple roll-ups, and then Hikaru Shida hits a corkscrew knee strike for the pinfall and retains her championship. Probably the only match I called correctly. I said Hikaru Shida was going to retain. I was pretty bored this whole match, and at certain points, they looked like they were wrestling in slow motion. This wasn't for me. I've heard some praise about it, but I think the downside to these tournaments is it doesn't really give a lot of time to build the story, but I have to say the video package did do a good job in that respect. And on a total other side note, does anyone else feel like the AEW Women's Championship is, like, really dinky looking? Like, in comparison to the giant, giant gold, silver, whatever belt of the AEW World Championship, I feel like the Women's Championship looks like, I don't know, it's like, I think it's smaller than the TNT title. It just looks dinky. And I, you know, when Nyla Rose held it, even worse. I just thought about that real quick. But I know a lot of the women are a lot tinier than the men. But honestly, if you look at WWE's titles, like even the NXT titles, the women's and the men's, same, pretty much the same. And same on the main roster. I don't have a lot to complain about AEW, but they need a way better women's belt because they also need a way better women's division. These two women are talented workers, but I just didn't. The story wasn't for me, and neither was the wrestling. Really, just felt slow, and I think some English speaking women in your main event might help. Or just some women who can speak English, because I think that also takes away from it a little bit of an ability to build a story. Again, a video package is great, but, you know, I want to see two women go at it on the mics, or I don't know, maybe I'm wrong about that. I should probably take that back, but I just think that there needs to be a better story going on in the women's division in order for us to get invested, because I wasn't invested in either of these two women this entire match. I don't know if I'm the only one who felt that way, but again, love to hear what you guys have to say or love to hear your thoughts. As I say that, though, there seems to be a story developing after the match because Nyla Rose comes out and hits Hikaru Shida from behind and then goes to Ryo Mizunami, but Hikaru Shida comes to her aid. Then we get Britt Baker and Maki Ito who come to help Nyla Rose and also beat down the champ and challenger. And then Thunder Rosa comes out and, you know, somehow makes a save and sends these three women. I forgot Rebel was there, like, forgetting to limp. Somehow sends these three women out of the ring. Four women, excuse me. Again, I keep forgetting Rebel. Whatever. The story between Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker is way more interesting than the long title match I just watched. That's the other thing. This match went way too long. Way too many near falls. As soon as she hit As soon as Karrueshita hit that move on the stage or on the ramp, match should have been done within the same minute, I think. So that was the AEW women's title match. And then moving on from one's pretty boring match to a really boring feud between Orange Cassidy and Chuck Taylor, best friends, versus Kip Sabian and Miro. So this match starts off with an interview with best friends before the match. And Alex Marvez says that this is the match we've all been chomping at the bits to see. And I audibly laughed. This is the match I was least looking forward to. Anyways, before they can get anything out, Miro and Kip Sabian attack them from out of nowhere. Miro sends Chuck through the window and then looks at the camera and says, "Play my music," and drags them out to the ring, or drags Chuck Taylor out to the ring. Chuck is all cut up and busted and bleeding. Again, I have notes for this match too, but I think I said I wasn't going to bring you through the entire match before, and I did. So I'm not going to bring you through this entire match because it was boring. Honestly, Orange Cassidy should have never came out. Preserve a one-on-one match between Miro and Orange Cassidy. If you were going to put Miro over, just put him over. Like, have him beat up Chuck and move on. Like, this was so long and it didn't need to be. And I'm not going to give it really any more time on this podcast because it was boring and the worst thing in AEW right now, in my opinion. But the match finishes with Miro putting Chuck in the camel clutch, and that's it. This feud is just stupid, drawn out, and boring. There was one part where Kip was going out to Penelope because Miro had chucked Orange Cassidy into her, and then he's like, "Kip, I need the tag," and Kip runs in and makes the tag. Like, I appreciated that moment because it was a little bit of some, I feel like they like, I don't know, a lot of the time something can happen and wrestlers just forget that they're in a match for a minute. So again, that's it. I'm done talking about this match because I'd love to hear from someone who enjoys this feud, because I feel like Miro is so unentertaining. And I'm sad because I had a lot of high hopes for him when he left WWE, and he's not really showing us anything. And I don't know if that's his fault, or I really can blame this on the performers, because the process allows the performers to have all this freedom. So best man Miro is not for me. All right, moving on to a backstage interview with Inner Circle, Chris Jericho, MJF, and Santana and Ortiz. So Alex Marvez tells them that they failed to capture the titles and asks what's next for the Inner Circle. And then Chris Jericho announces a War Council meeting on Wednesday and that there's going to be a change in the Inner Circle. And then MJF says it's time for a change in the Inner Circle and has that, like, MJF sly look that he's been doing in this slow burn of this Inner Circle, Inner Circle story of MJF slowly weaning his way into the leader of Inner Circle is continues, and I'm looking forward to Wednesday. Like, again, they don't just leave us with, oh, what are the Inner Circle gonna do now, or what's MJF and Chris Jericho gonna do now? They just lost the championship match. Like, this is the direction for them after that loss. And then Chris Jericho had a funny line. He's like, "I've never failed at anything in my life, idiot," to Alex Marvez. And I pop for Chris Jericho all the time. One of the best ever. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. And we will definitely talk about that on Thursday on our Dynamite review show. So then the next match is Big Money Matt versus Hangman Adam Page. Another match that went way too long. It was better than your typical mid-card storyline, though, and I'll give him that. But I just don't want to see Matt Hardy in a singles match anymore, especially against a guy as explosive as Hangman Page. Love this new character of Hangman. Love this new character of Matt Hardy. No one knows how to reinvent themselves like Matt Hardy. I mean, you look at all the different creations of his character. But I just don't need to see him wrestling singles matches. But Hangman Page is unbelievable as always, and such a beloved babyface, and just an easily likable dude. And I think he has main event matches in his future. But now this is a good filler feud, and I hope it's over here. But getting into the match, it was back and forth in the beginning. Hangman hits this cool diving sledgehammer move off the railing on the outside. I thought that was different. Matt lures him in and starts to go for his hand and slams his hand between the ramp and the stairs. So there's some joint manipulation by Matt, if you want to call it that. And then Hangman gets a near fall with the Death Valley Driver. Matt Hardy hits a Twist of Fate on the outside. And then later, Hangman hits a beautiful moonsault on the outside as well. Hangman hits the Deadeye on Matt before Private Party distracts the ref so he can't get a pinfall. And then Matt reverses the Buckshot Lariat into a side effect and then hits the Twist of Fate. And this was closest near fall. He calls Private Party to help him, but Dark Order comes in to even the odds. And Matt Hardy hits Adam off the apron, and he does this beautiful trust fall. And the Dark Order catches him and like flings him back up onto the apron. And then Hangman Page hits the Buckshot Lariat for the 1-2-3. And then Dark Order and Hangman have a wonderful embrace and share a beer after the match. And I love the story of Dark Order and Hangman Page. I just didn't need this match. Like, you could have cut 5 minutes off this match, and I would have been much happier. I love the line from Tony Schiavone. He said that Hangman's rich in friendship as well, because Hangman has now won the first quarter earnings of Matt Hardy. And so I like the premise of this match. It was a little different in the execution of it. I just, again, kind of boring. Nothing better than something they could have put on Dynamite, and even then I probably would have been saying the same thing. So yeah, this first 2 hours or whatever just kind of dragged on. But then we got the Face of the Revolution ladder match for the TNT title opportunity on Wednesday. So we will be talking about that as well on the Dynamite review show. And the participants in this match were Cody Rhodes, Scorpio Sky, Penta, El Zero Miedo, Lance Archer, and Max Caster, and then a participant who was to be announced. I like the promo leading into this match. Great video package. And Max Caster's rap was great as always. And that guy has something going for him, really. He's got great charisma. And I think this gimmick is great for him. He's killing it every week, in my opinion. Lance Archer just punched someone in the face on the way to the ring. I don't know if anybody else noticed that. And then the sixth participant, or am I counting right? Yes, this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's late, guys. The sixth participant was Ethan Page from Impact Wrestling. He's apparently a 2-time champion in Impact Wrestling. Kind of not a big star. And I saw a lot of people were disappointed in this. And I think this was a perfect role to put someone like him in. Like, it wasn't going to be RVD. It wasn't going to be, I don't know, Batista, whatever. This was just another participant for the ladder match and a contract signing for AEW. And I'm excited for Ethan Page. All ego Ethan Page. Apparently he's got a lot of charisma. And I'm sure he will be a great addition to the AEW roster. So getting into this match, a lot of great high spots. The best being the Death Driver or Pile Driver on Cody Rhodes on the ladder from Penta. Like, I don't know how these guys do this and put their body on the line like that, but it was incredible. Fast forward, again, a bunch of great spots. Just kind of spotty, though. This match wasn't like, it didn't tell a great kind of story throughout it. It just kind of felt like it went from spot to spot, almost like a bad last man standing match. Like, they just got from one spot to the other. But the end of the match, has Lance Archer looks like he's going to get the ring, and Ethan Page tries to stop him with a low blow and then hits him with the razor's edge. And then Jake Roberts comes and hits him with the clothesline. But Penta hits Roberts with the super kick, and then Penta hits, Sky hits Penta with the chair while he's climbing the ladder, but Cody Rhodes climbs up the other side. Sky shoves him off and grabs the brass ring for the win. And I did like the symbolism of Scorpio Sky, you know, shoving Cody Rhodes off and getting the brass ring, because, you know, we didn't want Cody to win this match. As much as I love Cody, and we all love Cody, I think, when you leave the match for an injury or for whatever, for however long, you don't get to just come back and win. It was like, I actually went to the, I think it was the 2019 Money in the Bank pay-per-view, or Bayley won, and then Brock Lesnar won the men's one, and everybody in the crowd was so angry about it, because where was he the entire match? Not taking bumps or anything, and then he just wins the Money in the Bank briefcase. So, Scorpio Sky with the win. Again, this match was fun, but that's all it really was. Nothing special, just another. It's really hard to miss with a ladder match in AEW, I think. But I think they could probably take a note out of NXT, and I think NXT definitely does ladder matches better than AEW has. But fun to watch, and yeah. And then we had the new debut in AEW, and I think I said it before on the podcast, and it was none other than Mr. Christian Cage. And like I said, I did call this in an email to DJ Kuzmo, and really all I can say about it is at least it wasn't Mark Henry. No, but in all seriousness, I think Christian's kind of gotten a lot of, like, I feel bad for Christian, because AEW overbooked this or overpromised on this and didn't deliver. If Paul White had said something more along the lines of, like, we have a new talent debuting at Revolution or whatever, like, new big name talent or something like that. But the way they built this up and had us all guessing Brock Lesnar and CM Punk, and there were some John Cena's out there, you wackos. John Cena is going to come to AEW. But the way AEW had us all, like, we didn't just get to that excitement level by ourselves. AEW led us there, and then, or Tony Khan specifically led us there, and then really Christian's going to be a disappointment in comparison to all the names that we were talking about. So I'm excited to see Christian in AEW. I think he can definitely do a lot more than he ever did in WWE. I loved his little run. I think it was against Randy Orton, and Sheamus might have been in there too, and he played a little slimy heel, and Edge came back and said, "You're a loser," basically. But the man is like 47, 49, something like that. Like, I don't know how much more he has in him, but I bet they will get every last little bit out of him that they can. All right, we got two more matches to go, guys. There was the street fight between Team Taz, Brian Cage, and Ricky Starks versus Darby Allin and Sting. Before I get into that, I would love to hear your guys' thoughts on the Christian debut, really. So shoot me an email, because I like Christian. I really do, and I just feel bad for him in this. I don't think he's a disappointment. I think AEW led him to be disappointing, his debut to be disappointing, if that makes any sense, but... All right, moving on to the street fight. This was a cinematic match, and let me get this off real quick. I'm not a fan of cinematic matches, besides the Firefly Funhouse, but I don't even really think that was a match. I just thought that was fun. So, and like a guilty pleasure, but I have to say, out of all cinematic matches, though, this was done pretty well. We had Taz on commentary, and you kind of expected this to be a cinematic match, too, considering Darby Allin is a filmmaker. But, so this match starts, and Brian Cage, later on, Brian Cage is carrying Darby Allin up the stairs in a suplex position. That was pretty incredible, and just dumps him on a trash can. Becomes 4-on-1 with Team Taz. And then Hobbs and Brian Cage send Darby Allin into a glass door, and that bump looked rough. Team Taz goes after Sting, and Darby tosses Sting the bat. He breaks it on Brian Cage's back, but then he just, like, I love this. He just looks at the bat, and he's like, oh, okay, it's broken now. And he just, like, whips up a shovel and slaps him across the face with it. It was a great, great little part. Darby, then we get the giant Darby jump, of course. Jumps from, like, four stories up onto Cage with a coffin drop. Of course, we knew Darby Allin was going to do some insane stuff in this match. Then we get Sting and Starks end up in the ring. Sting goes for a splash, and Starks pulls on the turnbuckle and dodges it. Excuse me, pulls off the turnbuckle and dodges it. He hits Sting with the spear for a two count, and then freaking Sting does like a sunset flip in this. I just want to throw that out there. Like 60-something-year-old Sting does a sunset flip. I want to... think about that every time I feel like my back hurts and I'm too lazy to get out of bed. Sting does a sunset flip. Starks hits him with a low blow mule kick. He goes for a power bomb, but Sting reverses it into a pinning combination for two, and that's what I'm talking about, the sunset flip pinning combination. Sting hits the scorpion death drop for the three on Starks, and Darby Allin and Sting take the win in this cinematic match that... I guess I can't really... Same thing with the ladder match, guys. This was just kind of fun, spotty, cool stuff that you were going to see. And I hope this is the end of this feud and we can move on And I would love to have less Sting on my TV personally. Like more time for the young guys. I understand that there's a big nostalgia factor there, and I'm sure Sting draws ratings, but I don't know. I want to see all the times that they did the same segment over and over again, week after week with this feud. I want to see that. Give me like a 5-10 minute match with some. I mean, for freaking Pac and Phoenix, just throw them in like 4 matches every night and I'll be happy. But all right, last but not least, guys, we are getting to the exploding barbed wire death match for the AEW world title, Kenny Omega versus Jon Moxley. And I still can't believe that this is a thing that happened. We will get into the finish for sure, but I do want to go through this match. Jon Moxley, in the beginning, I love he's entering. He, like, couldn't get the flask open, but I love that he, like, takes a swig of whatever he's got, Jack. Takes a swig of Jack before the match. Love the ref's protective outfit. I think it added to, like, the already dangerous scene. I like that there was way less bells and whistles for Kenny Omega's entrance. I think that was a great touch, you know, gave the seriousness to this match that it deserved. He had Don Callis on commentary. And yeah, and so the match starts, and I have to say, I love the anticipation between them leading into going into the barbed wire. They fight outside for a bit, and Mox hits Kenny with a barbed wire bat and a kendo stick. Kenny throws some powder in the eyes of Jon Moxley, and he is the first one to hit the barbed wire ropes, and the explosives go off. And man, did that look good, and I think a couple explosives afterward. I can't believe I'm talking about explosives on a pay-per-view podcast or on a wrestling podcast, but I think there were a couple better ones afterwards, but this was great. I mean, the actual barbed wire explosive ropes or whatever, like, that was done super well in my opinion. And then we had Kenny starting to attack the left leg, and he puts him in a figure four, and then Moxley's already cut open from the first time he hit the barbed wire ropes. But then he grabs the barbed wire covered chair and rakes the Kenny's knees back and forth to get out of the figure four. And then Kenny Omega sends him into the barbed wire board, and then Omega gets sent into the ropes, the exploding barbed wire ropes. The one part that I was like, I had sat up from my chair and I was like, oh my God, was when Jon Moxley is suplexing Kenny Omega and like onto the board of barbed wire. And I swear Kenny Omega was 2 inches away from just going like face first into that barbed wire and like poking an eye out. I was like, I cringed. And this whole match, I was like super, super like just almost like hugging my pillow and my blankets, like I'm as if I was watching a horror movie. Fast forward, right? We get a freaking paradigm shift onto the exploding barbed wire boards outside the ring, and Kenny goes face first. So speaking of Kenny Omega going face first into barbed wire, I mean, the one part about this is the wrong board exploded, and that was a little bit weird, but I don't care. These dudes just jumped off the ring onto the floor onto barbed wire. Like, brutal. Brutal stuff. This was a match where, like, a pile driver looks like the equivalent to, like, a shoulder block. Any other wrestling moves they did just, like, didn't look nearly as effective because of, obviously, all the danger going around them and around the ring. So later on, we get a low blow by Kenny Omega and a powerbomb for a near fall. There were 2 super snug V-triggers in the corner and then a one-winged angel. But this was my favorite part of the match, I think. Moxley breaks up the pinfall by hitting the explosion on the ropes with his foot. You protect the one-winged angel, and then this was such a creative way to, like, again, just add more suspense, add more creativity to this match. So I loved that. Really, really loved that. And then, of course, we get the Good Brothers coming out to intervene, and although Jon Moxley tries to fight him off, it's a 3-on-1 assault, and the match ends with Kenny Omega sending Jon Moxley with a one-winged angel through the chair, and we get the 1-2-3, and Kenny Omega retains his championship. And now we are going to talk about the after-the-match debacle. Let's call it that, I guess. So, like I said, Kenny Omega wins or defends his championship successfully. And then the Good Brothers and Kenny Omega continue to beat up Moxley because the whole story of they just need to put him down because he just keeps coming back. And eventually they handcuff him. He's in the middle of the ring, all beat up. They beat him up with a barbed wire bat. And we get, you know, the countdown starting. And Eddie Kingston, of all people, comes out to make the save. And before we get into anything else, I want to say that I loved this story beat. I think this was such a smart booking decision. Because, one, now you got something for Eddie Kingston to do, too, while Jon Moxley gets written off, supposedly, right, to go be a dad. And two, right, the idea that even though these two guys had such a vicious personal rivalry earlier this year or last year or something, again, all this time blurs together, guys, during quarantine, this guy, Eddie Kingston, still respects Moxley and Moxley still respects Kenny, and there's still a love there and a respect there because they grew up in a similar way and they get this whole thing, this whole style of fighting and violence and all that stuff. And and then the countdown continues to go down. Eddie can't get Moxley out of the ring, so he decides to cover him. And a beautiful moment, really. And then we get the big 3-2-1. Essentially a flamboyant version of King's entrance pyro. Little fireworks from the ring posts, and that's really it. It was terrible, guys. It was really bad. And two things could have happened here. I guess one, that could have been the initial plan, and it stunk. Or that it was a botch, and that's probably the more likely scenario. And a lot more was supposed to happen. But we had Eddie Kingston continued to sell it anyways, which I completely understand. And then they go off the air. The commentators sell it too, like it was this big thing, but you could tell there was like a slight silence of like, oh, guys, was that it? Was there supposed to be more? Because it sure felt like there was supposed to be more. So yeah, let's, like, we don't need to go down this. This sucked. We all know it sucked. This was like the worst time to have a botch, if that's what it was. But every wrestling company is entitled to stuff like this, to have a botch here and there. The problem with this is that it completely undercut, if not the whole pay-per-view, the entire match, at least. These two guys put each other through a war, a brutal, brutal war, and it was undercut by the super depressing, and I feel terrible, really, for Moxley and Kenny Omega, because, like I said, they beat the crap out of each other, and all for a realistically, I am sure AEW is going to come up with something to tie this whole bow together on Dynamite this week. I'm curious to know if Jon Moxley is going to get written out now, or if they're going to do something else, or if he's going to get written out at all, because he still holds, you know, another title, and I'm completely blanking on the name right now. But so we'll see. We'll just all have to kind of tune in and keep an eye out for what they're going to do next. But I'm excited to see, because I have faith in AEW and the process that they have to come up with something. And like I said, no company is perfect, guys. AEW is entitled to make mistakes too. And that's all this was tonight. Hopefully it was just a botch or a mistake. And I'm sure they will do their best to make the best out of it on TV on Wednesday. And, you know, make the best out of the whole pay-per-view. Some of this stuff was really not great. And make up for all that, because, I mean, this thing costs $50, right? They are asking for $50 of your money during a pandemic, which is no easy feat for a lot of people. The only thing I want to touch on before we wrap this thing up is that I think there was a press conference afterwards, and Tony Khan was said something along the lines of, like, well, you know, what did you guys expect? I can't literally blow them up in the ring, or we can't actually blow them up. And like, I get that 100%. Please don't kill people with explosions. But you can't advertise a exploding barbed wire death match and say that the whole ring is going to explode after 30 minutes and then give us pfft. Pfft was not enough. But if you hadn't seen the match or you didn't get to see the match, I still recommend you go watch it. I mean, these guys are unbelievably stupid, but incredible at what they do, and it was entertaining all into the pfft. And with that, that is all from me today, guys. I will talk to you guys on Thursday for the Dynamite Review Show. I'm excited to hear what you guys had to think about it. So if you want to send me your thoughts, it's mimi.realwwepodcast@gmail.com. Let me know what you thought. Let me know what you think about the and how they're going to tie it all back together. And like I said, I have faith in AEW to figure this thing out. So, and especially in Jon Moxley. So that is all from me, and I will talk to you guys next time.